You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB the CV, copyright 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
This is the Dan Levitard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
We have got a number of things to get to this hour. At the end of the hour, Mina Kimes will be joining us. We have to do Funniest Thing from the Sports Weekend. Greg Cody and others are going to go to the bucket. We've got to update some sueys. Greg Cody, do you have a back in my day today?
No, it's a veteran rest day for the sueys.
But it's a Tuesday.
Yeah, but you know, because I'm a veteran, it's not injury related. I get a rest day every like 3 or 4 Tuesdays.
Kind of like the opposite.
Contractually. So.
A veteran because you're old or because your dad was a Purple Heart veteran?
Because I'm old, but that's a good point by you.
Time now for Billy's useless sound montage. He has gone into the dungeon. You heard his resentment yesterday that he still has to do this for Metalark Media. He thinks Metalark Media should hire other people to do this. No one does it as well as Billy. What do we need to know about the terrible dungeon chamber that is useless sound montage this year, where you listen to all of these stupid, awful press conferences to make yourself the number 5 ranked football insider internationally, according to The Guardian?
I can tell you that it's done and ready to go.
It exists.
It exists.
90% of the job, Dano.
Yeah. And who, do we have any new stars? Do we have, I hope Andrew Luck is. I heard him talk during a sideline interview. You know, it's the Andrew Luck Memorial Useless Sound Montage.
No, we're not allowed to use that sound.
That's exclusive.
Cool.
Yeah. That's too bad.
Yeah, this is a recurring theme with Dan. He just doesn't understand dissemination.
Yeah, I forget. Yeah. Let's go ahead and play the stuff that we're allowed to disseminate.
Really set us up for failure here, Dan. Yeah.
Thanks for that.
Yep.
Ooh, man, I'm just appreciative of the efforts of those men.
It's week one.
Now you're in the real tempo, you know, real NFL tempo against real dudes.
Everybody made this out to be the Super Bowl, but there's 16 more games. The Super Bowl is not till February, and this is the beginning of September.
It was a hard-fought game on both sides, man, and it always is when you're in the AFC North.
It's a great feeling knowing you didn't meet the standard, but you still were resilient enough, had enough dog in you to find a way to win.
He's a dog.
We had a little bit of rough sledding in the first half.
You know, you're disappointed to not come out of here with a win. At the same time, we didn't lose.
Feel like a tie was better than a potential loss.
Whoa. You know, it's obviously a punch in the face to come out and lose a football game.
Personally, I was happy that our team got a chance to see what we really had inside us. We never gave up, and we won when we needed to.
They need to be what we need them to be.
I do know one thing. I love this team, and I love this coaching staff.
Our team is tough and gritty.
Well, I learned they got some moxie.
You guys asked me to define great defenses. It's a loose definition. They smile in the face of adversity.
You know, we came up with plays when we needed plays made, and he made them.
They believed in me. I believed in them.
There's some things that we did good. There's a lot of things that we did bad.
McDaniels, he's going to need a wheelbarrow, man, for his nuts to carry around, man. He got a lot of football on this. You know what I'm saying?
Spillane's got an eye injury. But, man, it's just good to come in here in a hostile environment, man, and not blink.
Yeah, I mean, I always feel like I have something to prove.
There's nothing extra with Khalil Mack. Khalil Mack is that way all the time. This is just your first time seeing it.
You characterize the play of your offense today.
It was enough. We're 1-0.
We're resilient. I mean, I knew that about us, but we were able to show it. We acted upon it.
We're going
to
be our worst own enemy all season long.
You know, you got to be able to take the good with the bad.
If you got ground to defend, defend it. You know, if you got bullets in the gun on offense, you fire them.
We shot ourselves in the foot.
We hurt ourselves.
We beat ourselves.
This is a game, in my opinion, that we absolutely lost.
Unfortunately, too little, too late.
You guys wrote our obituary back in May, and you'll continue to write our obituary. Who cares? Because we got 16 games.
We're all taking receipts on all the people who continually mock and say that we ain't going to do anything. I'm taking receipts.
So write whatever y'all want. The same guys that you guys ranked as 45th. You buried us in May. Bury us again. We don't care. We'll get back to work. Thank you.
45th.
Who's got receipts?
That's Robert Saleh, the
Jets.
The look at me, Louis coach.
Run
some stairs, buddy.
Yeah, really. An hour of stairs, please.
Yeah.
How do you get ranked 45th out of 32 teams?
When Arthur Smith is your head coach.
I saw it yesterday. For some reason, I was watching Jets-Ravens highlights, and I saw in the third quarter, the Jets were 0-7 on third down. They converted a third down. The receiver got beyond the first down marker and then fumbled it for fourth down and four. Fumbled it backwards.
Oh, my God.
So the Jets were then 0-8 on third down.
Oh, watch out. Watch out, Woody. He's keeping receipts.
But what? How do you come out with like chest beating like that where you can't convert a third down until the third quarter when you're loaned to like Joe Flacco is your quarterback? What receipts are you keeping?
What receipts are you keeping?
Good luck getting that refund.
They are the receipts that are in your glove compartment that you're afraid to take to anywhere because it's so faded and dated that there's no way that they're going to honor any of this. The last time you were good, it was Rex Ryan and Mark Sanchez that gave you enthusiasm.
You got the Costanza wallet? Is that what you're saying? They just stuffed receipts and you're trying to close it?
How do you not enjoy Mike Tomlin saying so-and-so's got an eye injury and then going straight to we did not blink, perhaps because we have eye injuries?
He's got to be self-aware at this point, with right?
The black Air Force Ones that he's given everybody on his team.
That was nice.
And he did the Antonio Brown dance, shit on.
That was funny. Seeing Mike Tomlin dance with his players after beating the Bengals. So here's some of the backstory on this game, because the Bengals tweeted out from their account, what are they stealing exactly? And then the Steelers tweeted out the football. Because Joe Burrow has this way of maybe he'll win, but he's going to get sacked 10 times. He's going to have to overcome a great deal. Did you guys see the numbers on that football game? Because 17.4 million people watch CBS, and Steelers-Bengals did the best number for a regional game since 1998.
Wow.
And that's
the NFL.
That's a Trubisky game. That's Trubisky giving you the best numbers. That's how starved they are. Now, I don't know. There's a lot of manipulation going on with the ratings, and I don't know what's real and what's not. But what I do know is real is that a whole lot of people were paying attention to everything that was happening on Sunday.
Sunday felt like a national holiday. There wasn't a single person that I knew that wasn't around a television that had football going on, that had some semblance of knowledge of today is the day that we lose our husbands for football season.
Mike, I got to stop you. You got to watch what you're saying, man, because Sunday was also September 11th.
No, I yeah, no, the national holiday.
National holiday, and this is the day we lose.
Thank you for the reminder. Yeah. But no, it's just, and women watching it too. I didn't mean to make it just like a man thing. Why'd you do this to me?
Go sit in the penalty box, Mike. Go sit for 10 minutes.
Oh, no. Just been a very bad teammate this week.
Helping you. I'm saving you.
Yeah. Is that what you were doing for us yesterday?
What were the clips that were most circulated from that? Yeah, exactly.
What?
Yeah.
Time now for funniest thing from the sports weekend. We have a number of things to choose from, and Tony's going to get us started as Mike goes to the penalty box because, yes, it wasn't just husbands that were around their television, and September 11th was not a national holiday for football. We remember September 11th for other things. Let's go ahead and do funniest thing from the sports weekend.
Hey, people, tell us what in the sport made you laugh hard this weekend. It is a segment we call What Made You Laugh This Weekend. Ha ha ha!
Funniest thing from the sports weekend is presented by CBD MD.
Tony, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
Dan, it's really hot in Miami. And the coach for Southern Miss wore the Al Golden white shirt with tie. So and it was transparent by about the second drive in the first quarter. I love that. Why are we wearing white shirts at all anymore? Let's stop wearing dress shirts.
With no undershirt.
After Labor Day, too.
Yeah, you can't wear white after Labor Day, Dano.
Wait, you're banning white dress shirts?
Yeah, white dress shirts in Miami? What are we doing?
With no undershirt.
What? Yeah, let's not do that. No more dress shirts.
The swampiness.
Guayaberas only.
You have to wear something that prevents us from seeing the swampiness gathering in what is no longer a white shirt, because all it looks like is you've been rained on and it's sticking to your body, and I see your nipples and the hair that's on your chest.
Wicked.
I suppose that, okay, you can ban white shirts if you're stood on the visitor's sideline at Hard Rock Stadium at noon on a Saturday. Maybe we can ban white shirts there, but a ban on all white dress shirts, I'm not having that.
Too absolute.
What happens to Heat games?
Roy, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
The AFC South had zero wins yesterday, and two of the teams played each other.
It was good. It was the stat of the day. Billy, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
Dan, yesterday on Monday, September 12th, Emmett Smith took to Twitter, and he retweeted a graphic that showed the final score of UF defeating Utah 29-26 from 2 weeks ago. And he said, at Gators football, great win against Utah. Good work and keep the program moving forward. Hashtag go Gators. Doesn't seem to be aware of the recent loss.
Was it? So it was after the loss to Kentucky?
Yes, it was yesterday he did this.
They made such a big deal about Stoops passing Bear Bryant at Kentucky. It made me think like Mel Tucker passing Nick Saban at Michigan State. It's like, what are we talking about? Bear Bryant at Kentucky. What is that, 60 wins? Congratulations to a Stoops brother.
I mean, to win at that program in the SEC East, Stoops has done a brilliant job. Now, Bear Bryant is not exactly the marker for that, but
I believe Bear Bryant was a rhetorical trick there, where they're trying to show you. I'm not saying it's easy to win in Kentucky. Very few people have done it. I'm just saying that I don't associate in any way Bear Bryant with Kentucky. Chris Whittingham, what is the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
At the Commanders game, there were mugs for sale with an outline of Washington around the word Commanders. The only problem was it was Washington State. Nice. And this is being sold in an official team truck. They tried to obfuscate and remove the mugs from the window that was outside of the stadium and tried to say that those weren't from us. Those were some third-party outfit selling mugs. Those weren't us. But very clearly being sold, Washington State Commanders.
That's the most incompetent franchise in football, right?
It just... I feel bad because, like, there has to have been somebody who's not at all related to Daniel Snyder that maybe put those in by mistake, but there's just so many bits of evidence. Do you know that Washington, D.C. didn't get the World Cup basically because that stadium is a hole and nobody wants to go there? And so they had to actually, for their World Cup bid, put Baltimore Stadium in. So is Washington, D.C. hosting the World Cup? But we'll play the games in Baltimore, no big deal.
Amin, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
Tyreek Hill praising McDaniels for having, quote, cojones.
Did he call it coco?
Cojones.
So he didn't say cojones? Tyreek Hill's got to learn a little bit more Miami. He didn't say cojones. He said cojones?
Maybe he meant cojones como coco. Two cocos equaling one pair of cojones.
Greg Cody, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
I love the Chicago Bears getting called for illegal toweling for trying to sop up water for a field goal attempt. Illegal toweling.
How do you towel illegally?
I don't know.
What is the penalty? What do you know? Can you give us any more information upon this story? I have not heard anything about illegal toweling being a penalty. This is the first that I'm hearing of this.
It was a penalty?
I'm on it, Deno.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Amin's on it.
I will go to the penalty box now and see what Ryan has to offer us over there from the penalty box on Funniest Thing from the Sports Weekend.
Russell Wilson's outfit. You can't lose that game dressed that way. And also, why is he high-fiving nobody? This should be talked about more.
You are confused by this. There is a great deal of high-fiving of nobody that Russell Wilson is doing. We're going to go to the bucket of death here in a second, but I'm going to go back before the weekend to the first football game because I believe the Thursday night football game has the biggest winner of the weekend still, even above Kansas City. It is Buffalo. It is Josh Allen. And how many people remembered when Josh Allen had that game and Jalen Ramsey, widely considered by consensus, the best at that position, that so many people as soon as Josh Allen had that game. Josh Allen, who represents me being more wrong than any human being who's ever played that sport, because I said he was going to be terrible, and now he's going to be an MVP for 10 years. Josh Allen torched Jalen Ramsey, and everyone reminded Jalen Ramsey, hey, you called this dude trash. You came out before a season, and you publicly, not anonymously, you called that dude trash. And there were so many people who loved dragging cocky Jalen Ramsey because they could say to him, hey, Josh Allen over here just made you look like a fool. That dude is like a centaur back there playing quarterback. I feel on wide open blitzes that cornerbacks are not only going to run the possibility of getting juked by him in the pocket, but just bouncing off him because they're not strong enough to tackle him because he's like a skyscraper back there who can move.
Can he keep doing that though? We had the same questions about Cam Newton, like with that big frame.
Ben
had to change his game, and Josh Allen has the arm talent to do it, which I guess is different, but those hits took a toll. Ben was pretty dynamic early on, impossible to bring down, and then he was very easy to bring down.
Yeah. And Collinsworth on the broadcast on Thursday night kept bringing up, why is he leaning into the line of scrimmage like this? Why is he absorbing all this contact? He kept going for it rather than he could slide out of the way, but it's almost like he was encouraged by these hits. We're only in year 5 or 6 of the Josh Allen experience. I agree with Mike. This could be a concern come year 10 or 11. If we're talking about quarterbacks aging like they've never aged before, I don't think that's on a good trajectory.
It's also a take that's like father time. It eventually always wins. You don't last long in that sport being the guy that leans into contact at that position. The hits catch up. It is irrefutable.
I have a definition for illegal toweling. Apparently, what they were trying to do was dry off the kicking area before a field goal attempt because it was very rainy at the game. So right. They took the towel and they tried to soak up the water around where the ball was. And that, Dan, is illegal.
We're going to go to the bucket of death, the Kentucky Fried Chicken bucket of death. Before we do that with Greg Cody, we will welcome in the Reaper. That's okay. You can play the music. But Billy, update us on losers, and now there are going to be more penalties, and we're going to get this done more often. Who's lost, and are they going to pick during this segment as well? Are they going to pick their punishments during this segment?
All right. Well, last week's losers were Greg, myself, Roy, Jess, and Amin. Okay. Everyone is here except Jess. We have the list of punishments, including Talk Like Christian, which we found out was Talk Like Chris Cody, where you have to combine words together. So maybe Chris, and then there was another word that was a chin, and then there was just... Anyway, so we have the list of things that we can choose from. I would recommend we do it off air, because if not, we're just going to kind of drag this segment longer than I'm already dragging it as it is. Things that remain on the list from the last grid that we haven't selected yet, which are easy if anyone wants them right now, we can get them out of the way. There is award season where we have to have 4 people dressed like different awards. The Emmy is still available, which was last night. If someone wants to dress like an Emmy, one of our losers, you can do that. Also, we need 2 people for our 5-person NSYNC punishment. So if 2 people that lost want to dress like NSYNC, we can knock that out of the way. If not, we'll just select off the air. Does anyone want to select either of those?
Are there any strings attached?
No strings attached. I'll dress like an NSYNC person and wipe myself off of this list.
I'll do it with you, Bill.
Okay, so that's 2. So Greg, Amin, and Jess still have to pick for this week. 2 have been selected.
Greg, reach into the Kentucky Fried Chicken bucket of death and pick a team. The first team can be thrown back unless it is death, in which case you just automatically get eliminated for 3
weeks. All right, enough.
Oh, he just loves. I mean, he's offered us nothing over the last 90 minutes except.
Oh, my God, the Jets.
That's death.
I'm throwing it back.
No, that might as well they're just playing the Cleveland Browns. They're 6-point dogs.
Now, watch out, Greg. They're keeping receipts now.
Receipts. You may want to save that for your underdog pick.
If I pick the Jets again, that doesn't count, right?
No, yes, you're stuck with the Jets. Does.
Cowboys. Mm. Okay.
All right, Cooper Rush.
No quarterback. Congratulations.
Oh, yeah.
Cowboys. Even worse. So do you think you upgraded with Cooper Rush at home against Joe Burrow and the defending AFC champions, or do you now wish that you kept the Jets against Jacoby Brissett?
Can I pick neither?
Greg is now, he's now got like 10 losses. He's got 10 things that he owes. He's going to be dressed up every Tuesday for the rest of time around here.
Man.
Billy, how do you feel about the Useless Sound and the experience again this year? People look forward to it. It's great. I love listening to it. But how do you feel? You hate doing it. You've hated doing it for years.
Me and Carl are going to have a talk.
Okay. You're going to pawn it off on somebody and it's going to get weaker. Who's going to get punished by having to do Useless Sound? Because it is a punishment. You have to, I don't know, what percentage of the sound do you listen to that you use? Is it even 5%?
No, it's not that high. It's very low, very low.
I feel for you.
And even those, like, 3 seconds that you get is like 30 seconds. So you're, you know, it's like hours of sound. It's fine.
You don't feel
labor. The thing is, like, it wasn't even that good this week. You know, it was fine.
It was good.
It was good.
That was very high pitched.
No, it was good.
Could have used more Andrew Luck.
It was good.
Jameis is your new star.
I hope he doesn't get hurt. I need Jameis all week. Jameis has been
amazing. Well, Tomlin carried you again. We were all, every time he made an appearance, we smiled.
We couldn't use it because it was exclusive to the Fox post game, but there was a post game between the reporter, Michael Thomas, and Jameis, and she asked him, like, you said you were feeling pain. Where's the pain? He's like, pain all over. Just pain all over. It was big, like, spinal Mike Tyson vibes.
How did you guys feel? Mike already told you that he enjoyed the bigness of Joe Buck and Troy Aikman doing the game, and he's not that interested in the Manning cast anyway because he is bothered, infuriated at every turn by the production elements that make it feel a little sloppier than Mike Ryan, control freak, would like. The rest of you? The broadcast last night, as money pours into these broadcasts, as the Mannings get more and more power at ESPN, as the Mannings get to be the thing that we talked about earlier, guys who are a little bit lame who get to be cool anyway, even though they're a little bit lame, because now the Mannings are going to be able to, at ESPN, hire people, grow, create a family business in broadcasting, that RG3 has to go through the more conventional route, and the Manning brothers, by virtue of their name and brand management, are doing what Brady's doing differently. Oh, we want to get in the content business. We want to take advantage of the next few years of all the quarterbacks get everybody's money in this sport. Aikman and Romo and Brady, the broadcasters, and the Mannings are saying, we want to do it too. You see, Steph Curry, I'd like to talk to Matt Sullivan about what he wrote for GQ, because Steph Curry, this is the most adult piece I've read on Steph Curry, where he's actually gotten control of his power and brand management.
Dan, I just want to point out real quick, you don't have to wonder or like to, because Matt Sullivan will be on Basketball Illuminati tomorrow. The episode that drops tomorrow.
And also this show tomorrow.
No way.
Yeah.
Why don't you guys, man, get off our beat. How about that?
All right. Which of the three questions would you like me to answer?
All of them.
Yes.
Because it was a Monday Night Football broadcast question and we went into Steph Curry land. But was it a little weird for everybody to have the sound on actually on Monday Night Football for the first time in a couple of seasons? Because I did that and then it was just like, wait, this is weird. It's Monday. It's not Fox. It kind of, there was like a weird acclimation, I thought, even for Troy and Joe, because remember, they're also working with new people too. They probably had their tight-knit unit for over a decade over there at Fox. But I really liked having that as a Monday Night Football game. Monday Night Football, growing up for me, and I know for you guys, it was the game. And the NFL kind of planned that Sunday night would take that over. But the Monday Night Football product has been so... I know that they care a lot about it over there at ESPN, but there have been a lot of bad decisions done for it. Obviously, they keep switching out. They're admitting it to you. And it tarnished the brand quite a bit because it wasn't something that you'd get excited for. And those are two marquee names. Those are two broadcasters that you have good memories surrounded by, knowing that they're calling important
games.
Well,
Buck is really polarizing, though. Buck might be the most unpopular person in that position.
Now,
because
I would love for someone to tell me, argue for, you know, Brian Griese, God bless them all, Steve Levy and Louis Riddick, over Troy Buck and
Troy Buck,
Troy Aikman and Joe Buck. It's a first class broadcast booth. It's creme de la creme, and ESPN hasn't had that maybe since Tirico and Gruden. It that's been a long time
ago. I've never thought that matters. I've never considered, and it's the amount of money being spent on it suggests that I'm wrong, because
I watched that game with my wife last night. She was into the storyline, but I also trusted the commentators to drive home the storyline. She didn't complain once about like what was on the TV. I enjoy listening to Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. Fine. That felt big to me.
I think I'm with Dan on this one. I remember it was midway through the first quarter. I was like, is that Joe Buck? Like, I heard the voice and finally put two and two together. And then I realized, oh, and that's Troy Aikman too. It doesn't matter, man. It really does. Like, the only time I feel like an announcer really matters is when something big happens. That's what makes Gus Johnson and Kevin Harlan and Marv Albert so great, is that when something big happens, they deliver on the energy of that moment. But like for a 60-minute football game, 55 of those minutes are just narration, bro.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one thing that I found myself doing on Sunday. I was like, oh, America's Game of the Week. And my initial thought was, oh, I can't wait to see Packers-Vikings with Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. And then all of a sudden it was Kevin Burkhardt and Greg Olsen. I was like, oh, not the same.
Yeah, there's something. They're hosts. They're hosts. They are essentially the Ryan Seacrest of your football Sunday. And that matters. And you talk about the big moments. What matters to me really is, how are you going to entertain me in a sport that takes a very long time in between plays? There's what, 11 minutes of actual action? I like their rapport. I know it's polarizing, but I kind of like Joe Buck's sense of humor. And it fills time. And that's important in baseball, certainly. It's why I rate certain baseball broadcasters higher than others, because there's so much.
Baseball's different. Baseball's different.
Yeah, but you need to be able to entertain me during the breaks, because if not, then I'll start looking at my other options. I think that's why people gravitate to ManningCast.
I think football's, I know what you're talking about, the breaks in action, but there's still stuff happening, whereas baseball, there's a lot of dead time where nothing's happening. So you really need a good broadcast crew to bridge you. In football, man, don't get me wrong. You can be bad at it. They are definitely bad at it, either bad technically or bad chemistry-wise, and that will pop off. But for the most part, an average broadcast crew, I don't think is much worse than the greatest crew that you have in the booth.
It feels small time. ESPN's Monday Night Football has felt small time since Tirico.
That's because of the matchups.
I'm telling you.
The matchups have been terrible.
They haven't had good matchups since Tirico and Gruden left. I'm telling you. It hasn't resonated with me. I'm often having that game on mute. I'll follow it along. I like a big game atmosphere, and those are two spectacular hosts for a big game. They've been attached to so many big games that they're the soundtrack to a big game, and I'm going to watch it. I want to feel like I'm part of something.
It's almost the same way where in UFC, if Joe Rogan's on the call, it feels bigger because it's
the same
A-team. Right, exactly. So I want to see Joe Buck. I want to see these guys.
You're not allowing for new people to feel big. Like, it's a thing that begets itself, right? You're saying, because you've done big games, that's a big game feel. So if you put someone new on a big game, it feels less like a big game. So the only people that ever get put on big games are people who have done big games before, and now it's 40 years before someone new has done a big game. Like, Kevin Burkhardt and Greg Olsen are awesome. They're really good at this.
Don't get me wrong. They were great. And they just weren't Joe Buck.
That's why we have the patriarchy. Because of people like Mike.
I would say Monday Night Football has given plenty of opportunities for people to show that they can do big games. Joe Tess, Jason Witten, Steve Levy, they have tried a bunch of different voices. And you cannot tell me that right now this is the best booth. Like, this is irrefutably the best booth that they've had in a decade.
Mike,
I think it's worth the investment.
I just don't think the difference is so. Like, I would agree. I think Joe Buck and Troy Aikman are very good.
I understand.
I don't understand the I'm gonna mute this thing.
No,
Like Steve Levy, Brian Griese, and Louis Riddick were doing a football broadcast. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman are doing a football broadcast. The rhythms of it are almost exactly the same.
There's not a mutable material.
I'm not doing shtick here. You're telling me I'm wrong about what I feel.
Mike, there's one difference where I think you're accurate, but I don't think it's because of them in particular, which is chemistry. The problem that ESPN's booth has had over the last decade is it's a revolving door, and no one is going to walk in and be perfect chemistry off day one. You got to give them a chance to kind of build that.
They gave them 2 years, man. They gave 2 years that, ain't they, enough, they man. Gave the previous. It is when you're the lone game and all eyes are on you. 2 years is enough. A full season is representative. It may not be for Tua, but it certainly is for broadcasters.
Is it quantifiable that who's in the booth moves the needle on a rating?
John Skipper, CEO of Metalark, says they never did any viable study at ESPN that suggested that anyone was a value proposition doing that.
All right. Well, we'll see what the press release says today, because I guarantee you that did a monster number, even with ESPN cannibalizing itself.
It's a game that went to the last kick of the game.
Wilson coming back. They had the big profile.
It's a results-oriented business. But
we'll get a representative sample. It's not just week one.
But I've also heard that from a business standpoint, it makes no sense what ESPN is doing by having the Manning cast. That it is absolutely like having an adverse effect on the actual number that they have on ESPN. They're making a plus play. They're making a branding play.
Yeah, they take away viewers.
Yeah, you're not going to... No, don't go to Monday Night Football when it's on a commercial break. Go to Manning cast.
They still get the viewers someplace else.
Don't go to Housewives or Monday Night Raw. Like, just if you're leaving ESPN, go to ESPN2.
But also, they sell the same commercials against it, so they might think they're adding viewers, and so you're not losing anything. And like you say, you get the branding play of having the Mannings.
Mina Kimes next.
Starting is everything when it comes to fitness. Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. Wherever you're starting, there's thousands of classes to get you moving. Whether that's beginners or advanced rides, feel-good live DJ rides, or artist-themed rides, they've got something for you. Peloton bike instructors keep you motivated from day one. They'll show you the basics, help take the guesswork out of your workout, and encourage you to build from there. And now with Peloton Entertainment, you can keep moving and watch your favorite TV shows and live sports as you ride. Perfect for those days when you don't want to miss a thing. And if you don't have a bike, take a dance class, take a core class, take Pilates, take a stretching class, start a program with Andy, do a core program with Emma. You can do it all at Peloton. You can get a Peloton row, and you're not even going to get wet because it's inside your own house without water. How'd they do it? I don't know. Wherever you're starting, get moving with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike rentals. Terms apply.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Dan Le Batard.
Sports.
Stugats.
More sports.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugats.
Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code DAN for a special offer when you sign up. That's code DAN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
I have just learned that our beloved Mina Kimes chugged her first beer in about a decade and a half because she had, who'd you have in the survivor pool? You and Mike were 5-1 this weekend, and you would have been 6-0 against the spread if not for the Dirty Lions doing Dirty Lion backdoor things. You would have been 6-0. Why did you end up chugging a beer? Who'd you have winning in the survivor pool that lost?
Because I made the most intelligent decision that any fan can make, which is I picked against my own team.
What?
I had Denver. No. Hear me out. It is the perfect emotional hedge. Because either way, you win. Either you win about the thing you actually care about, which is the team, or you win because you stay alive in the pool. I would gladly pay more than $50 for last night's outcome. I am feeling great about it. It is money well spent.
I don't know that you care about any one thing in sports or team more than the Seattle Seahawks. I have this right, right?
I care a lot about the Mariners, too.
Okay, so in the history of Seattle, where does Russell Wilson rank among most popular athletes ever before leaving?
Popular. Popular is an interesting phrase. You mean popular with the fan base? Popular...
I'm allowing you to define it as the local historian, the person who loves Russell Wilson and can speak on behalf of Seattle, because they were choosing Ken Griffey Jr. and other guys, and I was just surprised that he got booed last night. Perhaps I shouldn't have been, but I was.
Really? Okay. Well, I think you saw last night why he is not the most popular athlete in Seattle for a number of reasons. And by the way, I do think it's Ken Griffey Jr. First of all, even before he left, there had been drama involving Russell Wilson for 2 or 3 years at that point, rumblings of discontent, rumors that he wanted out, a list of teams he would like to be traded to, provided by his agent. That sowed a lot of discontent amongst the fan base. And as we learned eventually, amongst his teammates. I mean, but that goes back, of course, to the Legion of Boom roster, who, by the way, came out last night and looked like that one meme of the guy who goes to his haters' funeral. Did you see Doug Baldwin's tweet? I mean, that is unusual. Tom Brady's former teammates do not say those things. They do not do those things. And I think that reflected how complicated and fraught this situation.
Well, what's real here? Because it seemed like those defensive guys, you've read the reports and you know, we're talking to these people. What's real on teammates not liking Russell Wilson?
It's all real. I don't know what to tell you. It's all real. It was always real all along. And I'm not picking a side here. I guess I kind of am, but I don't know the full story of who dislikes who or why, whether it's actually any specific actions or simply, I would say, discrepancy between personalities, which I think is largely the case. But every rumor you've ever heard, except for maybe the one involving Golden Tate, which we don't need to get into, it's all true. And I think it's been proven true by their behavior after he left.
And how do you feel? Do you want to boo him? Does the emotion grab you when you see him in a Denver uniform last night? You feel what?
I'm not a booer. Well, I guess I admitted on Stupidity that I booed Jim Harbaugh once. But outside of that, I'm not really a booer. I find it to be largely comical and harmless. Like, we're talking about a bunch of adults wearing the jerseys with the names of other adults, making like unintelligible noises to express their discontent. I don't know how anyone can be that upset about that, especially compared to some of the truly awful things that fans do. But, you know, I was absolutely rooting for him to lose. Dan, it's not that just that he wanted out. And by the way, I think Seattle also deserves some of the blame for that. I put it on both parties, the dissolution of that marriage. It's that he spent the entire summer basically telling the world, like an ex who's moved on to a better partner, that he is living his best life. Some of the headlines that have come out, quote, Nathaniel Hackett, this is a partnership, quote, Russell Wilson, glad to be with a team where I don't have to carry them. Of course fans were going to boo. I actually am shocked that you're shocked by the booing, given the history and the recent history between the two parties.
Mina, it's kind of come out several times, and I don't know if it's confirmed, but we feel very strongly that Russell Wilson did, in fact, audible that play at the Super Bowl to throw rather than give it to Marshawn Lynch.
That's not true.
No, it's not true?
That's not true, yeah. That's actually not true. But what is true rumors.
When you say it's not true, can you elaborate?
Well, the rumor was that Pete Carroll called that play because he wanted Russell Wilson to have all the glory instead of Marshawn Lynch, which is nonsense.
No,
however,
that's not what I said, though. What I said was that Russell Wilson was the one that audibled the play.
You saying it is the first time I'd ever heard it. Now, that Mina's reaction to it makes me think you need to go sit in the
boundary
box.
No, but she misunderstood. She thought I said Pete Carroll made the call. No.
He did call that play.
Did he? Russell Wilson or Pete Carroll?
Pete Carroll called the play.
Okay. All right. There's there's reporting out there that it was Russell Wilson who audibled at the line.
We've got 10-day Tony scrambling right now because he was a person that told us that he read this in Brady Henderson's ESPN profile.
What's true is that the several players in the Seahawks defense believed that it was called. I didn't know that there was any audible rumors. Maybe that's true, but it's not, you know, factual if so. But what's important to me is the fact that actual players believed it, which tells you about the level of discord there. Not that it happened, it didn't happen, but that his own teammates believed that they didn't want to give Marshawn Lynch the credit. That, to me, is astounding.
Mina, as you say to me that you're surprised, I'm surprised by the booing, I just really think Seattle should appreciate the best quarterback they've ever had.
I think you can appreciate him in the right venue when he returns to be in the Ring of Honor, if he was there in civilian clothes, doing things, going to the hospital, whatever. But Dan, he was there wearing the jersey of the team that everybody and their mother, including me, picked to beat them. I guess the context was such, given the recent history, given all of the drama, given the fact that he was on the other team, given the primetime slot, it's not the moment for appreciation. Like, what do you expect them to do? Like, cheer for him as he came out? I mean, how the rest of you feel? Like, I want to know. I don't, because I'm not trying to be a homer here. I actually just don't find it that surprising.
Tony, are you going to do some clarifying here? Did you get this wrong? What information is to be had here?
You know, Dan, sometimes there's sharks in streets. Sometimes people get ball sacked. You know, it happens.
All right, both of you and Amin, go sit in the penalty box.
No. Amin was just espousing what Tony said.
No, but Amin goes with him.
I was guilty of that,
Amin
too.
Amin goes with him. Go sit out there with Tony, please. Thank you.
I've got something from Bleacher Report from...
Don't do this.
Are you going to get ball sacked again?
I'm at bleacherreport.com. It's a website. What, like, is it regional report with two zeros instead
of? Can you go outside, please? Can you leave again? Thank you.
September 2017. Right, that's all I'm going
to
say.
Good talking to you. So thank you.
This is before ball sack or anything was a thing.
Thank you. Appreciate all your help here. Go sit outside.
Ridiculous.
Mina, none of us seem to know what the hell was going to happen in these games on Sunday, other than you and Mike Ryan. Ryan, who again went 5-1 against the spread and should have gone 6-0. You love Philadelphia. You love the Chiefs. The Chiefs are going to be exactly the unstoppable spaceship they've always been?
Yes. The only thing that can stop them is the fact that the Bills also appear to be an unstoppable spaceship, and possibly the Chargers, although I don't think they look exactly as good, but they're definitely, it's really unfair right now that those three quarterbacks are all in the AFC, because they're playing football at an entirely different level from not just the other quarterbacks in the NFL right now, but things we've seen before. I mean, all of three of them routinely make throws that I think if were to happen during a primetime game would be, you know, turned into t-shirts or something. And then they're just lost to the sands of time. Like, at least five times a game, Justin Herbert will defy physics with his arm, and it will do something so crazy. I can't believe it just happened. And then everybody just moves on. It's, I don't know, man, those three quarterbacks are just unreal.
You guys should find her podcast if you do not already have it, the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, where you will get some really good football analysis and some silliness.
Mina, we discussed it briefly, but I want to talk a little bit about the end of game management from Nathaniel Hackett. And Russell Wilson, I think, gets a skate a little bit too, because he made some curious decisions on that drive. Certainly was not on the same page as his head coach, because the decisions that he made on that third down probably wouldn't have went that way if he knew that he was playing for a field goal. Can you tell us exactly how botched this was by the first-time head coach?
I'm glad you pointed out that both parties deserve a little bit of blame, because I don't know if you guys noticed this throughout the game, but Russell Wilson struggles with clock management, especially, you know, getting out of the huddle, getting the plays off in time. That's something you actually saw a lot in Seattle over the last 2 years. And it was kind of astounding, the contrast. Look, Geno Smith is not a better quarterback, but he was getting those plays off with, you know, over 10 seconds left on the clock. And that caused a lot of problems for Denver, including on that final drive, because it really... I thought throwing their offense out of whack here and there. I also agree with you on that third down. I don't know if he was out of sync with Nathaniel Hackett per se, but he did have Jerry Jeudy over the middle, which is an area that Russell Wilson has struggled to throw to in recent years. So he definitely deserves some of the blame, but, you know, the lion's share obviously goes to Hackett. I don't know if I've ever seen a first-time head coach make an error of that magnitude in prime time. It was so bad that it couldn't even be a debate topic on First Take this morning. Like, because we just couldn't find anyone willing to argue.
That's impossible.
The other side.
That's simply impossible.
No.
I don't believe you. That's not possible. You're saying that First Take, the incompetence was so befuddling that it arrived at consensus at First Take. It's not possible. And you guys couldn't figure out a way to discuss it?
If they did, it was not when I was on the show, because they were, we were talking about the game and the producers were like, yeah, I mean, you know, what are we doing here? Like that to me is like the true litmus test for consensus in America. If First Take can't argue about it, you're universally there. There's no, it's like how no, you can't get 90% of Americans to agree on it. Anything, even like the existence of the flying spaghetti monster, there should be like a First Take barometer for debate, because let me tell you, there is not a soul on earth defending Nathaniel Hackett this morning.
Put it on the poll, please, at Lebatard Show. Is the true litmus test for consensus in America that they can't figure out how to argue about it on First
Take? That's a good one. Yes. Mina, NFL place kickers all time are 2 for 41. Kicking 64-yard field goal attempts. But I have to ask you what I think is a personal question, Mina. Okay, and I'm sorry if this is too personal, but does a lifelong Seahawks fan like yourself attempt to justify the uniforms the Seahawks were wearing last night?
No, 100%. No, and it was honestly, like, personally embarrassing for me on a number of levels because – you know, first of all, they always wear in prime time, which is just so bad, right? But the fact that they were wearing it prime time versus Russell Wilson with his new team, it was like when you're out and you see your ex and you're just wearing a bad outfit and you're just like, God damn it. Like, what? Yeah, this is not how I wanted this to go. I wanted this to go perfectly. And then to have America watching, I mean, it's horrible. They're indefensible, those uniforms.
Let's grab from you what you thought were a couple of the most interesting things from the weekend. Some of the stuff that happened that was either most titillating to you or something that spurred the most curiosity from you.
I thought the Vikings looked awesome. You know, some of that you can pin obviously on Green Bay not having wide receivers, period, or their offensive line injuries. But I thought the Vikings pass rush combination of Za'Darius Smith and Danielle Hunter looks as advertised. And then on offense, like, it really is Rams North. I mean, I was tweeting about this, like, that everything Kevin O'Connell, who comes from the Rams, was doing reminded me so much of Los Angeles when things are clicking. Justin Jefferson is obviously going to go for like a zillion yards in this offense, which kind of everybody predicted, but just to see it play out in real time, you know, when you see a wide receiver who's just utterly undefendable, you know, and then when you're watching as a fan and you're watching the broadcast angle and every other play, you're like, how the hell is he so open? That is going to happen all season long with Justin Jefferson because of the way they're being used. And I really think the Vikings have a good shot to compete this year.
We talk a lot about Tuanon in Miami because there is a fervent zealousness around, zealotry around Tua that is a little bit odd. But the reason I was disappointed by game one is because, primarily, right, and these people get very mad at me when I sound negative after a win over Belichick with a first-time head coach, but I'm so desperate to see him like... he is the answer for 10 years, not game one against the Patriots 20-7. I want to see the stuff that makes me know that they've got a quarterback for a decade. I think it's what all Dolphin fans want, not 20-7 against the Patriots.
First, I'll say, I think Tuanon, or just Dolphins fans in general, is like one of the most successful bullying campaigns in the history of sports fandom. Because I have noticed that around here in NFL media generally, people are tiptoeing around Tua now because they don't want that noise. I agree with you. I thought it was actually a pretty underwhelming performance as well. You know, wasn't asked to do a lot necessarily. Didn't do a lot. I thought, you know, that decision making was good. But I have to say, my big takeaway was I was really, really impressed with Mike McDaniel. I thought the play calling, just the way he used the weapons at his disposal, the ability to get yards after the catch, which is something the Dolphins finished last in the league last year. Obviously, that was going to improve with the speed they added, but scheme has also played a role in it. And there was a sequence that I absolutely loved where on that final drive at the end of the first half, before they went for it, the Patriots sacked Tua. Bill Belichick doesn't stop the clock because he has no faith in his offense. And then to have that contrast two late plays later with Mike McDaniel, who has clearly total faith in his offense and in those wide receivers to pick up yards after the catch, was really, really exciting. And if I'm a Dolphins fan, at least I feel really good about that.
Well, Mina, I was going to say Tyreek Hill had almost 100 yards receiving, 42-yard touchdown catch for Waddle. Did you see anything from that combination that leads you optimistic that in a few games or deep into the season, we're going to think a lot different of Tua than we do right now?
Oh, I was nodding because you were like talking about them and then you finished it with think different of Tua. I think where you want to end up is feeling the same way about Tua. Made, well, Dolphins fans aren't going to like this, but you kind of want him to be Jimmy Garoppolo, which, by the way, Jimmy Garoppolo was part of a very successful team.
No, I don't. I don't want to watch him take care of the game. No, thank you. Not what I want to watch.
I don't know. Then I guess I have to be honest, despite my fear of the incoming wrath and bullying. You didn't really see much that makes you feel different, honestly, compared to last year. It could change.
Okay, I'm sounding like a homer here.
He has a very good heart.
I'm sounding like a homer here. Tua didn't throw deep last year because of the offense they ran.
Greg,
he didn't throw deep much.
He convinced no one on Sunday of anything, Greg, except Dolphin home base. No one.
If you'll allow me to finish the sentence. Tua didn't throw deep much last year, but had a deep accuracy that I believe led the NFL.
Yeah, meaning he threw like 14 deep balls.
Okay,
yeah,
meaning something may be there. Have you seen enough already to write him off as, no, Tyreek Hill and the combination of Hill and Waddle are not going to be enough to help Tua turn the corner?
Garoppolo's not a compliment.
I know, I didn't say it.
Not from week one. I mean, look, but let me be optimistic about this team. I think the offense is going to be good in the same way that the San Francisco offense was extremely efficient. Here's the thing about Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. You cannot press them. When the Patriots corners tried to press them, Tua went 6 for 6, a perfect 6 for 6, because they will get open. They are uncoverable in space. So I don't know why this whole discussion about the Dolphins always has to be a referendum on Tua Tagovailoa. The San Francisco 49ers are a very successful football team. And I say this as someone who's obviously been critical of Garoppolo and felt that they should have upgraded. And honestly, we'll see how I feel about Tua at the end of this. But as far as this season goes, if the goal is making the playoffs, yeah, I feel optimistic about them. Also, we haven't even talked about the defense, which I thought looked fantastic.
Yeah, we devolved into taking shots at Garoppolo when Mina actually started it as a compliment. I mean, the Niners have been trying to push out Jimmy Garoppolo for quite some time, subtly and then not so subtly with the draft pick. And every other quarterback that gets in there, their record is flatly not as good. When Jimmy Garoppolo is in there, they've been at their best. Like, yes, I know what he is not, but he's certainly good enough to start in the league. And if Tua gives you Garoppolo, like, you shouldn't having such a visceral reaction to it.
My point is that with a draft pick that high, I don't want a quarterback that needs to be managed by geniuses in order to be hidden and protected.
But you have a genius, hopefully.
But
right?
But also, yeah, they're going to have to pay him at some point as well. He's on his rookie contract. So at $30 million is a lot different, isn't it?
I guess my frustration sometimes with the Dolphins discourse with Tua is like every time we talk about the Dolphins, it has to be about, is Tua good enough? And I think this season we can have a different conversation, which is this team good enough to finish second in the division and be a wild card team? And I think, yes, we can have the discussion about whether they should replace Tua at the end of the season. And Dan, to your point, I think that there's no reason not to have that discussion based on what we've seen so far. But as far as this season, it's a better football team. Love what I'm seeing from the head coach, and I think they're going to be competitive in just about every game.
Who else impressed you? You said Vikings, you said Chiefs. Who else?
I'm trying to think of the non-obvious teams, you know, because obviously there's quite a few. Certainly not in the NFC. NFC South. I mean, I think the Bucs look pretty much as advertised. We spent all, obviously, I was about to say, everybody's talking about the Cowboys, but I'm actually sitting in the worldwide leader right now. So I feel like it would be pretty hypocritical of me to make that shot as I prepare for another. Actually, I think I'm about to go on SportsCenter and talk about the Cowboys in 10 minutes. I do think not enough time is being spent on how good the Bucs defense looks. I realize that the Cowboys offensive line is not perfect and they don't have skill players, but they look to me like the most dominant group in the NFC. And it's a big part of the reason why I expect the Bucs to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl.
One last question for Mina Kimes from me, host of the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, now part of Omaha and ESPN. Mina, was Julio Jones just lying to us? Is he a liar? Because he looked fantastic. He looked amazing. And that's not just the Brady ball placement or anything like that. Physically, he looked like Julio Jones of like 3 years ago.
I didn't believe it until they used him on a goddamn jet sweep.
You ran a jet sweep with Julio Jones. This was big, long con.
Conspiracy theory. Tom Brady, the only reason he came back is to try to propagate TB12. He doesn't care about winning Super Bowl. And Julio Jones is his Exhibit A for TB12. And holy smokes, what a sales pitch that was week one.
I wanted Julio Jones to end up with the Packers because I'm afraid that I'm going to watch Aaron Rodgers throw it to running backs and tight ends on play. Yes, you knew. I mean, come on, man. Mina, why isn't Julio Jones? Mina, why isn't Julio in
I thought
Green
Julio
Bay?
Jones would be used as a tight end.
Come on. Come on. Why can't Aaron have a Julio?
That's the world's. Does it look like a violin? Is that how you play the violin?
I believe the world's smallest violin gag is you rub your two fingers together.
Your violin,
you were trying to use the whole.
I was literally trying to find Mina, tiny violin.
You were playing a fiddle.
Oh my
you
God.
Were filing, in the bayou. You're filing your nails.
Don't on the front put porch. This out. I don't want Korean Twitter to see that. I don't want to be rebuked by my community.
Who's going to be terrible? Like, who are the teams that you're like, oh my God, this is appalling? Is that what Arizona's going to be all year?
Oh, man. No, I don't think so. I think the Chiefs are a buzzsaw. I don't think they're going to be good, but I think the Chiefs are just like a total buzzsaw. I actually think what we learned this weekend is not a lot of teams. Honestly, when you think about the teams who everyone thought were going to be terrible, the Texans, the Bears, the Falcons, they were all the Seahawks. I saw a lot of people, the Giants, I think I just named the teams that most people would have at the bottom of the power rankings, and most of them either won or were competitive in games. So to me, that bodes well for the NFL season. While I don't think there's, I think there's a pretty clear top tier below that, there might be more parity than people suspect.
We are telling you that you need to go listen as part of the Omaha network that Manning and ESPN are doing together with Mina, that her analysis, you call her and she's breaking down Marcus Mariota tape. It's very sad. So given that analysis, give us
That was worthwhile study. Marcus Mariota, good performance on Sunday.
Give us some of the people who stood out to you, names that the audience is going to want to know. Remember, because after 1 week, whether it's offensive line play you're seeing or linebackers or secondary, just a handful of names where you're like, whoa, that dude was overwhelming on Sunday, and more people need to take inventory of it.
What a great segment. Just name some guys.
Name
I wish
them.
I could do that on SportsCenter instead of talking about the Cowboys right now. Okay, off the top of my noggin, I thought Antonio Gibson, I just watched that game with Washington, was a guy who a lot of people thought was going to be replaced as a starting running back. I thought he looked exceptional. I think that is a sneaky, creative offensive scheme. I thought he looked really good as a pass catcher, too, which is something that he did in college. So I am definitely excited about him. Okay, moving around the league. I mean, Diontae Johnson jumped out to me. That's another one where it's like one of the most incredible catches I've ever seen, and like nobody's ever like it's just lost to the sands of time, right? I mean, it's like crazy. If you make that catch in
prime
time,
there were six of them on Sunday where I'm like, holy shit! How does a human being catch that?
Along those lines, I actually a lesser known name. I thought DeAndre Carter, with the Chargers, looked really strong. He's had a really good camp. Justin Herbert clearly trusts him, and with Keenan Allen out for injury, that might be like a sneaky pickup for people who are desperately looking for someone to replace Keenan Allen. So I would go with that. I thought George Karlaftis on the Chiefs, who's a rookie, who was one of their first round draft picks, looked exceptional against Arizona. And, focusing on like the Super Bowl and things that are really matter amongst the competitive teams, the Chiefs really needed to fix their defense. And him and McDuffie, who was the other rookie they took out of Washington, both looked really strong.
Mina, always good seeing you. Always good catching up with you. It goes without saying that the audience misses you.
You have a very handsome dog. I want to say that right now because I say Mike's dog is hideous, that I somehow hate dogs. But Lenny's a very handsome dog. He's a stupid dog.
You call him stupid.
He's a stupid dog, but he is handsome. He's a looker.
Lenny has a deal with Omaha. Where's your deal with Omaha?
Oof. Oh, I got a deal with Meadowlark. I got a deal with Meadowlark.
Lenny's got his name on a podcast.
I got my name on a podcast. Don't I?
No.
I don't.
Shit. Your name's not actually.
Like the Greg Cody show. You
good
get your name
and
throw an eye
open. Thank you.
Bye. I'm going to go talk about the Cowboys for the 20th time.
Way to sell it.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.